Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Across the number one internet sports talk show in the world. How have you been? Happy St. Patrick's Day to ya. Ready to pound down some Guinnesses tomorrow? Well, I tell you what, we've got a great show planned for you as usual. As always, we never let you down right here on the Balance Radio Network. I tell you what, we've got planned for you today is just better than last week. Better than last week, that's for sure. What we've got coming up here in just a few moments here is we've got Radio Speed Talk. We're going to be talking a lot about IndyCar. What's going on with IndyCar? And we're also going to be talking with $2 Bill Josh, Preston Barr today. One of the things that we're really going to be breaking down, though, is the Tourney Championships, getting you ready for March Madness. March Madness, that's right. It's March. It's time to get mad because we're going to have some bracket busters going on. Obviously, IU took a huge win against Illinois. Well, I don't know how huge it is, but it certainly is a win and one of the big wins. I don't know. But a lot of people say maybe they were playing for pride. Maybe they were playing for this, that, and the other. But one thing about it is IU has nailed down the Big Ten Championship. Also, we're going to be talking about a lot of the other teams still in the Big Ten Championship tournament, I should say. You know, and that brings us to an interesting point, and we'll get to that as we move into the show here later on with Gene and $2 Bill Josh and Preston Barr, is what exactly is IU playing for? Are they playing for the Big Ten Championship? Well, no, because they've got the Big Ten Championship, but are they playing to win the tournament? Yes. And here's the thing, if they happen to lose the tournament, well, we don't expect that to happen, but if they happen to lose the tournament, then there could be a slim possibility, depending on how the other schools do. There is a very good possibility that IU won't have the number one seed. Now we think that that should be no problem. Obviously, probably the Dayton region in the number one seed. And when was the last time we saw IU in the number one position? That's right, a long time ago. Too long to remember, my friends. 1-917-889-8516 is our digits. We are live today. I tell you what, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. I don't know if you guys ever have those weeks that just like go away. Well, it's been one of those crazy couple of weeks here at The Balance. And obviously last week we taped our show last week. So, you know, we've just got a lot going on here. And you know what? We're growing, though, and we couldn't do it without you. Make sure that you guys are following us on our social media, T-Balance, and on Facebook as well. Just search The Balance. We'll have a lot of fun with that. I tell you what, we are the official – we're the only station that has, oh, let me put it this way, we're the only station that has an official Twitter reporter, and that's $2 Bill Josh, that's for sure. So all I can tell you is if you're following us on Twitter, and make sure you follow, that's a word for you, make sure you follow, make sure you follow $2 Bill Josh. And he actually helps us do all of our tweeting and gets us. So I tell you what, you're just missing out if you're not following us on Twitter. That's for sure. You ever have one of those days, one of those mornings where things are just supposed to be the way they're supposed to be, but they're not the way they're supposed to be? Well, that's one of these mornings. So we're trying to get things going here for you here. Make sure that you guys unbelievable. Unbelievable. Oh, you know what? Here's what's going on here. So I'm looking at all my little notes, all my little things going on. Anyway, we're going to be right back here in just a few moments. We'll be joined with Cliff Tanner from Radio Speed Talk. Going to be talking some IndyCar. $2 Bill Josh coming up at the bottom of the hour here. We're going to be continuing our race car discussion. Obviously going to be breaking down the big race in Bristol today. Bristol, Tennessee, boys. Not Bristol, Connecticut. Just don't get it confused. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to break down the NCAA March Madness. And you know what? That brings me to an interesting point. Yesterday, we did our very first March Madness update. If you missed it, it was at 2:30 Eastern, but it's there on the archives. And we're going to be doing another March Madness update tomorrow with Gene Walker, who's going to be calling in today live from Chicago at the Big Ten tournament up there. So I tell you what, if you miss a second, you've missed it all. We'll be right back right here on the Balanced Radio Network.
Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana Water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley, Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. a distributor for all major suppliers. We can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
We're like this dynamic duo on in the NASCAR circuit and called Shake and Bake. my character holds the world's record for the number of second place finishes. Because our technique is I let Will's car draft behind me and then he swings around and wins the race every time. So. Uh-huh.
My minions, and welcome back to The Balance. My name's Saul Marquis, El Presidente. Well, we do this thing every Saturday morning with Radio Speed Talk, guys, and we talk everything that's fast on the planet, from cars to boats and coming soon, dog sleds and planes. Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk, how you doing, sir?
Man, I tell you what, Tom, it's been a crazy week, and I'm glad it's over. We're only a few days away from spring. I am so ready for some 70s and 80s, baby.
I tell you what, and you know what a good sign about is what we're going to be talking about here is IndyCar, the Indianapolis 500 just right around the corner, and the start of another race season, Mr. Cliff Tanner, and that is the start of IndyCar season. A very exciting time of the year. So spring is on the way. Heck, St. Paddy's Day is tomorrow, sir. Are you Irish, or are you just Irish on one day a year? Or?
Well, actually, I do have a little bit of Irish in me, but I don't necessarily pay attention to it a lot. You know, hey, it's just me, though.
Well, are you one of those Northeastern Indiana Notre Dame Fighting Irish fans?
Well, I like them. I'm not a real big fan, although I started going to games up in the press box, and I kind of fell in love with Notre Dame. So, yeah, I kind of like them, but are they my favorite? No.
Well, I tell you what, if you got to be at a press box, Notre Dame is the place to be at. We're going to be talking about that Notre Dame-Louisville game here a little bit later on in the show. Well, let's get right to it, my friend. IndyCar's right around the corner. Obviously, the Honda Grand Prix out in St. Petersburg coming up March 24th. The green flag flies at 12 o'clock p.m. Talk with me a little bit about that track and what the drivers look for in this very unique, odd-shaped track, if you will. Kind of looks like a shoehorn.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of does in a way. A lot of drivers love that track, and there is some curves, and as you call it, a shoehorn, there's some pretty sharp ones in there. It's going to be an interesting race, as it is every year. There's not a better way to start than St. Petersburg, you know what I'm saying? It's a beautiful track, it's warm down there, and it's just going to be, some good racing. You know, a lot of good road races, racers are going to be there, and is AJ driving that one? I'm not sure.
AJ Allmendinger, we'll find that out here before the segment's over. I can promise you that much. I do know the last time Roger Penske hired, and I know was a partial season driver. I don't know. I'll have to look at. I know the Indianapolis 500 is one of them, but for some reason I was. You know what? You're right. It is in St. Petersburg. So there you go. AJ gets a turn again back up there in with Penske, giving him a second chance, retaining a third driver. So we'll see what happens there with Penske Racing. Certainly want to get in deeper into that conversation. But Talk with me a little bit about St. Petersburg. Obviously, a lot of IndyCar drivers live there in the Florida, St. Petersburg area. Obviously, that's where Dan Weldon called home. So, obviously, we look at this track maybe being what a lot of people, a lot of drivers would call their home track. What is it about this track that a lot of drivers like so much?
Well, for one, with all the hairpin turns that they have on the one section of the track, it takes some real good drivers to go through that. And it's just, it's number one, I guess you would say, let's put it this way, it's kind of like the second Indianapolis 500. Does that make sense? And what I mean by that is I think, to me, that's their second biggest race of the year, not only because it's the opening, but because it does take a special talent to drive down there. And a lot of guys live down there. And at home track or not, you know, there's always some good racing going on. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, because there's a lot of guys that are wanting to come off of good years and some guys coming off of bad years. But they just love that track. It's just it's something special that they get a ton of fans down there. And, I mean, I don't know what else you could say other than the fact that it is a fun race to watch. It's one of the few races I do watch in Indy on a consistent basis, because it does take a special talent to get through those turns.
Well, many times we look at drivers going from IndyCar to NASCAR. Not too many times do we see a driver moving from NASCAR to Indy. When we're talking about A.J. Allmendinger, is it light on the open wheel experience himself after becoming a good old boy in NASCAR? So I wonder if he's forgotten his 2003 Atlantic Championship season, and or if he's glossed over his 11 top fives and 27 rounds during his two full seasons with Champ Car. Remember Champ Car?
yeah, man. Oh, man, I forgot about Champ Car.
Walking down memory lane there, huh? I tell you what, the 7 years that A.J. Allmendinger spent in NASCAR wasn't too kind to the open-wheel refugee, I guess is how we'll put it. So how's he going to be accepted? Is Penske looking at him maybe, okay, AJ, we're going to give you a shot, call it a probation, call it an audition, do well in these two races, we've got other races for you, or he does these two races and he's out looking for another job?
Well, that's one of the things we talked about on our show this week is Roger Penske and his scheme. Well, I don't want to say scheme, and his plans with his race teams. There's one thing you can say about Roger Penske. He's one of the nicest guys there is when it comes to car owners, okay? He can be shrewd, a businessman if he needs to be, but I literally believe that he is looking to give AJ a full-time ride in the IRL, depending on how he does. I don't think it's a two-race-and-done thing. Will he race any more this year? I don't really know. The problem is when Roger Penske picks a driver, I mean, let's take a look at Sam Hornish. You know, we can go into him, too. You know, he goes over in the NASCAR. He's having all kinds of issues, but Roger Penske sticks behind his guy. Yes, he had to get rid of him because of the drug thing, and I'm talking about Allmendinger. Sorry, I kind of flipped Dean.
No, that's
there.
Right. I'm following you. I'm with you.
Okay, well, just in case somebody isn't, though, that's why I was saying that. But when you take Allmendinger, he had to get rid of him. I mean, when there's a drug charge, whether it's legal or illegal, you got to get rid of them, because we both know that any kind of racing is driven mostly by sponsorship. And most sponsorships, when somebody gets busted for drugs, they're going to walk away real quick. And he saw they couldn't do that. But AJ went and did what he had to do. He got reinstated into NASCAR. And I think Roger Penske's seen the commitment there, and I think he really believes A.J. Allmendinger belongs in an open-wheel car more so than he does in a NASCAR, because he does so much better at it. But A.J. is also one of the few guys out there that could drive just about anything you put in front of him.
Well, one thing for sure is that A.J. Allmendinger, and you look at Penske, I don't think it was anything accidental. Maybe Roger Penske is saying, okay, AJ, you know, I believe in you. I'm gonna give you a second shot. Everybody deserves a second chance. I'm gonna give you that. But also, I don't know that when you look at the expectations of AJ Allmendinger, I think in the inner circles of Penske Racing, it's high. And you look at And you look at Roger Penske, he doesn't do anything by accident. Everything
right.
He does intentionally. And, I think that, Gene Penske is perfectly capable of providing AJ Allmendinger a car in the future. Obviously, a lot of it depends on how well he does at Indy, especially how well he does at Indy. But if he wins or gets a top 10 finish in Indy, I would look for AJ to if he can get a good finish anyway in Indy, and I certainly believe that he will. I think they'll find enough money to put him in a few more races. And, and we'll see what happens. Obviously, I'm not a huge fan of A.J. Allmendinger, just for a lot of reasons, and the most recent issue being one of those. But I'm also all for, giving him a shot. And I'm excited for another championship-caliber driver from the Champ Car Series getting a chance in the combined series. I mean, like him or not, he certainly has the skills and the equipment, and so let's see if he can go out there and do it in the IndyCar races. And if nothing else, the guy who gained his oval chops in Fender cars should be fun to watch in those two races anyway.
Well, and I think he will be, and that's, again, one of the reasons why I think Penske's taking him over to the IRL side, and this is a topic for a show you may want to do sometime, because it just came into my mind there. But it's easier, I think, to get a long-term deal for a sponsorship in IRL than it is in NASCAR, unless you're a big, heavy hitter. But, Jack Roush has had all kinds of issues there. But there's one thing you can say about Roger Penske. He never really has a problem with any type of sponsorship. But I think he realizes that A.J. Allmendinger is better off. And I think it's better for A.J.'s psyche to go over to IRL and not race so much NASCAR just to get away from him, because people are still talking about him and saying some stuff. But I'm kind of like you. I'm not a real huge fan of A.J. Allmendinger. The fact that he's back in there and he didn't walk away from it, say like a Jeremy Mayfield or somebody like that, but and he knew what he was taking. I don't care what he tells you or anybody else tells you. He knew what he was taking, and that's why he got busted. But because a lot of people don't realize he was tested twice, not once, but twice. And he had a little bit then, and this was a bigger thing. But I think A.J. Allmendinger, if he does well, will get more rides this year. But I don't like to say that because you don't know about Roger Penske and what goes through his mind. He may be saying, okay, he did good. Let's put a third car up next year. And, of course, a lot of that's going to depend on sponsorship, too.
Well, absolutely. And like I said, we'll see how he does. And especially, I think the true test comes here in Indianapolis as well. Well, as we move into the IndyCar season coming up here, one of the things I want to talk about with you is IndyCar adapting the aero kits. Do you think this will be a step towards putting the series right with the fans? Or perhaps the difference in appearance of cars will captivate the infatuation? Just like them. We'll go with that. That's way too big of a word for me. Too early in the morning, I guess. But I think maybe the new look of the car obviously will attract a lot of new fans to the sport. But agree or disagree on IndyCar adapting aero kits?
Well, I think, number one, it was more for a safety thing. And I think it's going to make the racing a lot more competitive. And a lot of times, sometimes what you do is when you make it more competitive, then there's a lot more crashes and all kinds of other things. But the fans are looking for something new in racing all the time. I don't think they'll walk away from this. Will it get a bunch of new fans for that? No. I think what's going to get them a lot of new fans is what the sport did last year and getting all of their races out on CBS and all of that, CBS. And I believe they did a great job of doing that. If they keep promoting the racing like they're doing, it doesn't matter what you do with that car, as long as you don't make it only go like 50 miles an hour. But I think it's a smart move, and I think they will get fans for it.
Well, certainly if we go back a few years, 2 or 3 years ago, we asked most fans what they wanted in the new IndyCar look to be, I'm certain that most of them, or we would have probably got a lot of responses. In fact, most of those responses are the same banded around the things that we know now, I guess is what I'm saying. Multiple chassis manufacturers, stock engines, a free-for-all run, bring what you brung, if you will. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at with it. I don't know how big of a difference to the fans these aero kits will make, and maybe this is a question we can ask Kenny as when he is able to be on the show again with us. But I don't know that that's going to make a huge difference in the overall aspect of the fan. And I don't know if all cars will equalize. Cliff, what would we have out there? Formula One,
well,
maybe?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. One or two dominant drivers. I mean, that's why they change aero packages and do different things to try to make the cars more even. And I think I agree with everything you said, but I do believe if this new aero package makes it more competitive and more exciting racing, I think that will bring the fans. Do they give two licks about the aero package? No. What they care about is seeing a good product, seeing some good racing, which is exactly why NASCAR is switching their stuff around. When they went to the Gen 6 car. So they see that, you know, I think IRL is starting to see what other series are doing with changing things around the car, and they want to see it a lot more exciting. I mean, you know, take somebody from like Sarah Fisher Racing or one of the, you know, one or two horse racers. If they can make that more competitive by switching packages like that, that's what they want, and that's what the fans want to see, because we all know that a lot of them out there always root for the underdog.
Well, absolutely, and I tell you what, I we've talked about it here, and we'll certainly, as we get closer to the Indianapolis 500, the Indy Lights series is fun to watch for developmental drivers, type drivers. So when we look at the Indy Lights series, and I follow them a lot, we follow them a lot here on the balance. But when we look at the Indy Lights series, what are some of the things we can look for this year in the Indy Lights series?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't follow that Indy Light as much. But, you know, again, I think you're going to see some exciting racing there. You got you know, guys are going to be coming up trying to get into the big time. And I really haven't had a chance to look at the Indy Light series yet this year, Tom, I'll be honest with you.
Well, no, and that's certainly one of the drivers that we like to talk to here on The Balance, and a good friend of The Balance as well is David Ostella, certainly coming up through the ranks. But you look at some of the drivers like Hinchcliffe, who I had an opportunity to get to know during the Indy Lights series. Obviously, a lot of drivers, our modern-day drivers, have come up through the Indy Lights series. So a true, I think, a true developmental league lies in the Indy Lights series. So let's talk about Honda. Does Honda have what it takes to get a championship this year in the IndyCar series?
That's probably a better question to ask Kenny, because he's more familiar with all that stuff. But Honda, you know, they're going to get in there and try to prove themselves. Chevy's, you know, been pretty strong. But Honda, you know, they don't want to go in there and look stupid. Nobody wants to go into car racing and look stupid. But they'll get there. It may take a while, but they'll get there.
All right, well, let's look at that then real quickly. Obviously, maybe another question for Kenny. But who is going to be the dominant manufacturer in the IndyCar series this year?
You know, that's a tough one. I think Chevy, you know, made a great point last year, and I think they're going to continue to improve a little bit. I think Chevy might be the one to watch out for this year.
Well, let's talk about some of the drivers, and let's look at Joseph Newgarden, Sarah Fisher's team. I like him a lot from last year, and Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing will field the number 21 car in the Indianapolis 500 with obviously Joseph Newgarden. We like Joseph Newgarden. He's obviously become a very popular person in social media. Has Joseph Newgarden, we'll just call it, matured enough to handle a championship that's right around the corner for him if he continues to do what he did last year? And what a great, if you look at a great team that Sarah Fisher has been able to put together, obviously being a local girl from here in Indianapolis, a very successful driver, and now a very successful team owner. And if she can pull off a championship, she'll join the ranks of very, very few.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's not a harder working, you know, person in NASCAR or excuse me, IRL, man, I can't get NASCAR off the brake today, than Sarah Fisher. She has worked, I mean, she took almost nothing and made it into something, and I think she made a good move with Newgarden. I really did. He showed a lot of promise last year, and I think, again, you know, it kind of goes back to a couple of things. If this aero package is, it brings it more even, he's going to have a better shot. But more importantly, you know, Kenny says this a lot, and I say this a lot, team chemistry is going to make a big difference. If that team can, you know, build on the chemistry they had last year, he could, you know, feasibly he could give it a run. Will he get there? I think we might be looking at a year or two maybe before he gets to a championship or even close to a championship. But if somebody can bring it to Sarah Fisher, it's going to be him. And I love his enthusiasm. He's a good young kid, and he loves to drive, and he learned a lot last year, and he's going to build on that momentum this year, I have no doubt.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ryan Briscoe. Is he going to have a ride this year? I mean, I know that Penske, again, was talking about another partial schedule, like we just talked about with Allmendinger. But Ryan Briscoe, if you look at Penske looking at A.J. Allmendinger and say, hey, A.J., we're going to give you a shot at a partial season, and then you think Ryan Briscoe's scratching his head and saying, hello, welcome back, Carter, pick me, pick me, pick me. Why not Ryan Briscoe for Penske?
Well, again, you know, I can't really answer that because I'm not Roger Penske. I mean, it's hard telling with him. Ryan Briscoe is a good driver. He's been around for a long time, and he knows what he's doing. But, again, Penske sees things in certain people, and he knows what he's doing. I don't know. I'd kind of be a little leery or if I was him, you know, why is this going on? I mean, it does make you think, what the heck, you know. But Briscoe will be around. I have no doubt about that.
Well, he certainly recently said that his only regret was not accepting a 3-race deal with Ray Hall Letterman. And that deal could have included a ride in Indianapolis 500, but James Jake stepped in with the full sponsorship. But nonetheless, Ryan Briscoe had the opportunity to run a partial season. So, yeah, I think he's going to be around. But I'm just and you're right. Penske obviously sees things in drivers that maybe a lot of us in the fan aspect doesn't. But I got to ask myself, is he's a great driver. Why are not more teams looking at him as someone to put in their car, even if it is for a partial season?
That's a good question. And, you know, sometimes it's because of what's happened in the past. Sometimes it's, you know, wondering, you know, I think a lot of owners in IRL, more so now than ever, they look at the complete picture. They don't look at anymore how great of a driver you are. They look at how you control media, and Penske's real big on stuff like that. But you got to talk about how you get along with the media, how you get along with other drivers, how bad your temper, and all that. Unless you're Marco Andretti, he's allowed because he's part of the family. But they take a look at the whole picture, and I think that might be part of it. I don't know, but maybe they also knew, you know, maybe it was Penske's baby. So, you know, who knows?
Well, one more question on IndyCar, and this is kind of, again, more of a technical question. I apologize. I didn't mean to load you up with the technical questions today, but it is what it is. Until we get some actual races to talk about, we sometimes have to just kind of pick and grab. But, you know, when you've been out there, especially Indianapolis 500 or any IndyCar race, and not that the NASCAR cars aren't just as hot on the tracks, but certainly IndyCar is set a lot lower to the ground. And you look at the track temperature, especially on a steaming hot day, you could even add the Indianapolis 500, but as the year goes on, I guess what my question would be, what would be the ideal temperatures for a driver inside the car to make them comfortable? Because if you remember right, was it just last year or the year before last, may have been last year, when it was scorching hot there in Indianapolis 500, somewhere around 90 degrees, record temperature, and I can't remember the driver's name. It might have been Tony Kanaan. One of the drivers said he could feel the bottom of his shoes melting to the bottom of the race car there. So what is the ideal temperature, and what does IndyCar as a race series have to do to protect the drivers on the inside of those cars?
Well, I mean, they're going to do anything they can to protect the driver, but ideal temperature is probably going to be 70 degrees. I mean, that would be for me wearing a suit and everything like that. But when you got that much heat coming down, and you're talking a 500-mile race, and you're sitting that close to the ground, I really don't know what IRL could do with that to make that safer. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be driving. But I would say probably around 60, 70 degrees for that driver would be awesome, although we know that's never going to happen in the summertime because you're right down on the track. I don't know if there's some way they can come up with some type of insulation to put in there, maybe some kind of a firewall that might be a thin layer that they can put on there without upsetting the car. But, yeah, definitely they got to watch it because you never know what the temperature is going to be. And, you know, I don't know about you, man, but I don't know if I could handle my feet being that hot, you know, even if you're driving. And all that wind doesn't do anything because you're boxed in. It's not like NASCAR, you know, where you've got stuff that you know, blows down inside you and all that. So they got to do something, but I would say there's got to be some way they could figure out to put some insulation on the bottom of that floor, especially by the feet, because those are the ones that are going to be closest to the track.
Well, absolutely, and we'll certainly see how that comes to play here in the coming season. You know, I'm sitting here looking at, and that's okay. It's a good segue. I'm looking at some texts sent over to us from our partner in crime, Mr. Kenny Barr, talking about the qualifications. But it was like, hey, did you see where that there girl qualified in the out there at Bristol? So real quickly, we'll use that as a segue, obviously, to talk about Bristol and what went on there as well. Kyle Busch wins the Bristol pole. Kane comes in second. Hamlin in third. Vickers fourth. Menard fifth. And Danica 41.
Well, you know, again, it all goes back. It's a different type of track. And she's good at the super speedways. And the reason she's good at the super speedways is because she had the experience being on those type of tracks in the open wheel. So she's going to have a little bit better car, you know. And there's a difference between qualifying and racing. Although she did good in Daytona, but she still has, you know, since then has wrecked two cars. And now she's starting 41 back there. So you know what? Remember, even though she raced a little bit, a season and a half now, I think it is, in the Nationwide. But she's really a rookie when it comes to the Sprint Cup. So, you know, she's going to have to take some lumps. And I can guarantee you her boyfriend's going to blow her away when it comes to Rookie of the Year. But I will tell you this much. One thing I've noticed over the last year, and Michael Waltrip is a smart guy. A lot of people don't give him credit as an owner. But I'm going to tell you what, he's brought in Brian Vickers on the short tracks, and he's always been in the top 10. Look out for that boy to not come out a winner this time, because I'm telling you, Vickers is another one of those guys that had some issues with his lungs and all that, some health issues, but he's coming back. I wish somebody would give that guy a full-time ride again, but he's going to be tough down there. But you also got Hamlin, who's always tough down there. Mark Martin's not racing, because that's what Vickers is driving. So it's going to be interesting. I think we're going to see a fourth different winner this time, but I think Ryan Vickers is going to give everybody a run for their money on this one.
Well, absolutely, and I've said that before as well, that Brian Vickers really has the car to make that happen. So let's talk a little bit about the Bristol, obviously, and we're running out of time here. You told me to keep you to 30 minutes, and I will do that, and we're going to continue our racing conversation here in just a moment here. But let's talk about the race down there at Bristol, obviously one of the most popular races with fans, and let's talk about what's going on down there in Bristol this weekend, and what are some of the things that we can look for at Bristol this year.
Well, you're going to look for this is my kind of racing, man. This is a kind of racing I grew up on. So I always love watching Bristol and the short tracks. I mean, that to me, that's what racing should be all about. There's going to be some beating and banging, but I will say this. The fans love it. They're right there on top of it. And, you know, there's tempers flying because, you know, that's what NASCAR needs. You know, everybody likes to see that. But I'm going to tell you what. Look out for the big one I think this may be where Mr. Gordon and Mr. Boyer may finally have it out.
Well, who's going to be the first one to hit a girl this year?
That's already done. Didn't who was it that hit her last week? Although that was by accident because she hit the wall, or not last week, but in Phoenix she got hit after she hit the wall. I'm trying to remember who it was. Oh, David Reagan. I don't know if you've seen the race, but it ripped off the entire side of her car. All that was left was a sheet metal on the inside.
Well, you know what NASCAR drivers say about Danica?
Go ahead.
Her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
Well, I'll give him that.
I couldn't resist, man. I tell you what, I got all these new sound bites, and I got to play with them, man. You know, I absolutely got to play with them. All right, real quickly, Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speech, I appreciate you joining us today on a Saturday morning. Before we let you go, again, we got another 30 minutes of race talking, and then we're going to be moving right in at the top of the hour. We're going to be talking about all of the NCAA championship games going on. Obviously, the Big Ten up in Chicago. Gene's up there at the United Center in Chicago, bringing us some live updates from up there. A great showing from IU, just shutting down Illinois, and we're going to talk about that at the top of the hour. But Kenny Barr, going to have to leave us. So what's going on this week on Radio Speed Talk? Obviously, tomorrow on our St. Patrick's edition of Radio Speed Talk, what's going on with you guys?
Well, first of all, you need to stamp Cliff Tanner on your forehead and put a mirror up every time I'm on. I'm not Kenny Barr.
Did I just say Kenny Barr? I actually said that. I didn't even realize I said that.
You know? That's all right, man. It's all good. I just got to give you a hard time.
You're right. I'm going to have to put that on there. I'm going to have to put a little buzz collar on there.
That's all right. No big deal, man. I just got to give you a hard time. Hey, you catch me in mistakes, I catch you in mistakes. That's what that's what bro racing is all about, right?
that's what's being in the gang. But absolutely, we can agree on one thing.
Her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
Go ahead. Yeah, no. Cliff Tanner, what's going on at Radio Speed Talk this week?
Well, like I said, we talked a little bit about, Bristol and things going on there. We talked about Jeremy Clemens being reinstated. We just had a great time, and it kind of got out of hand, but, you know, we had some old-fashioned popcorn and root beer between breaks and all that. So we just had a good old time. And, of course, we did the Do You Know and a lot of other good things there. We talked about a couple of area tracks, Kokomo and Kansas City. So we covered that a little bit. But, you can catch us at RadioSpeedTalk.com. Or you can go to Facebook.com/RadioSpeedTalk, and I'll be at Radio Speed Talk 2. That's the number 2 on Twitter.
All right, Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. Make sure that you have yourself a safe and happy St. Patrick's Day weekend, sir. And we'll catch you
next. You do the
same. We'll catch you next week right here on The Balance, sir. Have yourself a good weekend.
All right, buddy. You too. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Cliff Tanner, always a good time to have him here on The Balance Radio Network, guys. I tell you what, you do not want to miss the next half hour of Racing $2 Bill. Josh is going to be joining us. And also, Preston Barr is going to jump in here with us a little bit and talk with us a little bit about those Kansas Jayhawks and kind of segue us into the top of the hour, guys. We get ready to talk hoops and get ready for March Madness right here on The Balance Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Yep, I'm flying through the air. This is not good.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. I'll tell you what, it's always good to talk to Cliff Tanner over at Radio Speed Talk. We have a lot of fun doing that. Well, you know, typically we talk racing for an hour. Excuse me. We talk racing for an hour. Well, we're a little off today, but that's okay. Our clock is way off today, so we got about 15 more minutes. We're going to break down the Bristol and get ready for the top of the hour. Joining us now is $2 Bill Josh. Typically from Kansas, but he's somehow found his way to Chicago, Mr. Preston Barr. Preston, how you doing, sir?
I am doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Now, let me know, are you in Chicago for the Big Ten tournament, or are you just there soaking up the sights as a tourist?
Well, my brother lives downtown, so me and him are going to celebrate St. Patrick's Day and see the Green River today. I wish I could go see some games at the United Center because it's like a mile away from me right now.
Well,
but,
you know,
unfortunately, I'll miss them.
Well, I think they probably have scalpers there, just so you know. You could probably find yourself a ticket. And I wish I'd known you were going to be there. I probably could have worked that out. See, you got to use the perks of knowing people, man. There's a reason why you say, hey, I got a guy. And you know what? I did know that your brother lived there because I know your dad. So which means you need to behave down there. Because if I find out that you're not behaving, I'm going to tell your dad. Just
see,
let
this
you know.
Is, yeah, this is the problem of my connection. Everyone comes back to my dad now.
Hey, I tell you what, he set the bar for you.
That was a good. Did you hear that pun that was in there?
Did you like that?
That's
that was pretty
bar.
Good. That
I like it. Good. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know if any of your dad's racing knowledge rubbed off on you, but we're going to talk Bristol here for just a few more minutes, and then we're going to get into the Big Ten tournament as well. Mr. $2 Bill Josh also joining us today, our official Twitter reporter for The Balance. $2 Bill Josh, how's things going out there in the social media world today, sir?
It's going good. How is everyone today? Excited for the big IU game coming up here in about 3-4 hours from now?
Well, I don't know how big that is. We're going to save a lot of that conversation for the official next segment. But it's a pretty big game, that's for sure. Well, it's been a long time since IU's been able to say that they're the champions without having to win the tournament. We're going to get into the technicalities of that as we go on here. All right, guys, big boys down in Bristol, Josh. Jenica Patrick qualify at number 41, as you just heard us talk with Cliff about qualifying number 41. Obviously, a big race down there in Bristol. Josh, give us your thoughts.
Well, I'm not surprised she qualified 41st down at Bristol. Everybody kind of thought she would struggle at Bristol. It's a driver track, not a car track. It's a track the driver has to be a really good driver in order to handle. As you do like 5 laps at Bristol per minute. She qualified 41st, but I have a feeling she's going to run in the top 30 all day. Yeah, granted, I said top 30, but for Dan Patrick, she could finish 30th. That'll be a big deal.
Well, Josh, it sounds like you're in a cave there. So whatever you're doing with your microphone, switch it back to the way you were before. but Preston Barr, let me ask you this: we're gonna give you a pop quiz here. Bristol, Tennessee, NASCAR. Any thoughts?
I think exactly what he said about the it's not a car track, it's a driver track is going to ring really true here. It doesn't, I mean, there was so much hype, way too much hype about Danica winning the pole and then finishing pretty high. But I think she'll probably, like he said, run in the top 30. I think maybe like top 35. I can't imagine that she's going to make up a ton of positions on the track just because it's a highly skilled track. It requires some really impressive driving to get around people on a track that small.
Well, one of the things about Bristol is it is a small track, and that's where tempers flare. And we heard Cliff talk about earlier, just a few minutes ago, about, and Josh, I want to get your thoughts on this, about, hey, this could be the race where we see Clint and Jeff finish a unsettled battle. Maybe it's already settled. Thoughts, Josh?
Well, it could be, but I'm going to give them both the benefit of the doubt. They've stayed out of each other's way so far this season, and I'm going to say they're not going to do anything, and they're just going to let bygones be bygones.
What about you, Preston? Do you think this is the week when Clint Bowyer and Jeff Gordon settle a score?
I have to say, races are particularly vindictive, so I would not be surprised to see something. However, I don't think that it'll happen.
Well, speaking about racing and vindictive and in the things and tempers that flare, we think about Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin, even though he's out $25,000, Josh, has declared himself the winner over NASCAR in the battle of public opinion. And you're out there in the social media world, our official Twitter reporter. The Joe Gibbs racing driver also believes, after meeting with Chairman Brian France, that NASCAR understands. Now, this is Denny Hamlin's thing. He understands that NASCAR's overreacted in finding him for the for what the governing body called disparaging remarks. Basically, he said something bad about NASCAR. They didn't like it about the Gen 6 car on March 3rd there in Phoenix. Now, here's the thing. We know NASCAR is a good old boy network waving the American flag. Freedom of speech, I say what you want to say. But no, communism ruled over in the governing body of NASCAR, and they fined him $25,000 because Denny Hamlin hurt the government of NASCAR. Josh?
Well, I do think there's a bit overblown. Denny Hamlin does seem to have the fans behind him, but at the end of the day, Denny, keep your mouth shut. You haven't really done anything that impressive in NASCAR. NASCAR didn't purposely make a car you can't pass in. I personally thought Denny Hamlin sounded like he needed a whamburger from McDonald's to go along with some French fries, and he sounded like a crybaby when he made that comment. I think Denny Hamlin just needs to pay the fine and deal with it like a big boy.
Well, here's the thing. Like a big boy, and that's where I'm getting at. Why should... I mean, that'd be like Tony Kanaan saying, hey, you know, I'm not really happy with the new shape or whatever of the new IndyCar that we're going to see this year. So IndyCar says, well, we didn't like you saying that. We're going to fine you $25,000. It's not the point of whether or not he should pay the fine. The point is he shouldn't have been fined in the first place just because he said something bad about NASCAR. What are your thoughts, Preston?
My thoughts all the time, if you're going to whine, keep it in the garage, whine to your friend, stop complaining about decisions NASCAR makes. I think this happens like in business. You start like whining and complaining about management decisions, they're not going to fine you, but clearly your rapport is going to go down. So 9 times out of 10, just shut up. Just like in this case, just pay the fine or don't say anything in the first place and don't get fined.
Well, what have you got this to say? Well,
her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
You say that, right? Well, we're talking about Danica. Can NASCAR drivers say that? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we all have jobs. We've all been in the corporate world, and obviously, well, Preston, you're getting there. You're studying to be in the corporate world. Obviously, in an international business, there are going to be times maybe where you need to keep your mouth shut. But as an employee of a company, If they should be able to in America anyway, especially in the good old boy. I take Denny Hamlin's side on this. Now, here's the thing. It's not necessarily maybe he should have said something. Maybe he shouldn't have said it. You're right. Maybe he should have just not opened his mouth. But he did. I mean, that'd be like going to work and being afraid you're going to get fired because you say you don't like your boss. As long as you're not insubordinate to him, and as long as you're obeying the rules, Denny Hamlin's not breaking any NASCAR rules on the track. He's not putting any drivers in safety in harm's way or anything like that. He simply made a remark. He was fined $25,000 for that remark. In my opinion, NASCAR was very, very wrong on that. They acted like a dictator, not a company. And let's face it, he works for Joe Gibbs Racing. He doesn't work for NASCAR, okay? And NASCAR isn't going to say, Joe Gibbs Racing, don't show up for the next race. Don't show up at Bristol. You're not welcome. They're not going to say that. Hell no. Heck no. Good job, Denny Hamlin. You've got my vote on this one. The thing is, we could debate all day long whether or not he should have made the comment or shouldn't have made the comment. The point is, NASCAR fined him $25,000 simply because he said something bad about the Gen 6 car. So that's my thoughts, and it's my show, and that's what really counts, right? You guys are just on here as a courtesy. No, I'm just kidding. All right, $2 bill, Josh. Let's look at the Bristol race. Obviously, we see a lot going on at this track, a very short track. Now, and we try to get Walter Cox from ESPN. We call him Uncle Walter around here, a good friend of the show. But he's doing a cup practice right now, and so he just couldn't make it happen. But let's talk about this Bristol race. I was trying to get back to I think Kyle Busch has the poll on that. We just talked about this just a few minutes ago. But anyway, Josh, give us your thoughts on the Bristol race, what to look for, and what are the key points of the race?
Well, it's one of the quickest races of the year. It has the most laps of any race of the year. It has 500 laps. It's a very action-packed. Cars are packed into that track like sardines. Literally, once they start to go single file, the cars will stretch all the way around the entire track. And you'll see drivers start to get lapped very quickly, probably on lap 5 or 6. You'll see somebody's temper flare up. If I had to guess, you'll see one of the Busch brothers' temper flare up before you will Jeff Gordon. Although apparently, when Jeff Gordon had his last daughter a couple of years ago, he became a very vindictive person. I don't know if the two's related, but ever since then, he's been a very vindictive person. So I wouldn't be entirely shocked to see Jeff Gordon get into it with somebody. I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say Danica Patrick is going to cause the first caution tomorrow. And I have a feeling she's going to put whoever the leader is in the wall when they're trying to
lap. Her ass is so hot. I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
What was that you were saying about Danica?
I think she's going to bring out the first caution tomorrow.
Well, you know what? I'm waiting. We talked a little bit about this with Cliff earlier, and we got to get into some college basketball talk, which is coming up here. But we were talking about the Cliff. I want to know who's going to be the first driver just to go up and throw their helmet at Danica, get out of the car, and just go at it. But then they'll be confused because
her ass is so hot. I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
I'm not allowed to push buttons anymore, guys. But is there going to be any guy out there go out there and just smack the hell out of Danica Patrick?
Absolutely not.
So we won't see a Clint Bowyer and a Danica Patrick fight then, huh? You don't think?
No, I almost guarantee that we won't see one. And even if a guy driver was dumb enough to do it, you would see a season-long suspension immediately handed down from NASCAR.
Oh, well, you know, Preston, I don't know where to go with this. Any thoughts?
I would not be surprised that if Danica causes a caution, whether it's going to be the first one or not, it would not surprise me whatsoever. This is one of those tracks that's just always incredibly tense the entire time just because it's so tiny and people are I mean, passing on this track is just really difficult. But who knows? First time Danica gets lapped, maybe they see, start passing her from behind. She causes a traffic accident. I don't know how that happens. But.
Her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
Beware when approaching from behind.
All right, enough about Danica's behind and derriere, that's for sure. All right, guys, real quickly, we got to make our picks, and we got to take a break, and we'll get back in and jump into this college hoops talk. Josh, who wins out there in Bristol tomorrow?
I want to stick with Jimmy Johnson. He's been hot all year long on the track.
All right, Preston Barr, who wins out there?
I was hoping you wouldn't say Jimmy Johnson because that was my pick. Jimmy Johnson wins.
You can still pick Jimmy Johnson. That's okay. We'll let you do that as well. Well, guys, we got to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to jump right into the college basketball hoop section. And we're gonna really break down these tournaments. Obviously, we're going to talk about Butler. We're going to talk about IU, the Big Ten tournament. We're going to talk about those Jayhawks. Mr. Preston Barr, and we'll be right back, guys, to get into college basketball Saturday. Also joining us on a rare thing will be Axel and Gene Walker, live also from Chicago, at the Big Ten tournament, is going to be joining us as well. All coming up in the next hour, guys. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Optimus Prime, and I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.
Gives me goosebumps every time I listen to it. Of course, it's no secret I'm a big diehard IU fan. Obviously, an IU alumni as well. And I use the word obviously way too much. But joining us is Mr. Preston Barr up in Chicago. Also joining us is $2 Bill Josh, our official Twitter reporter, and Mr. Axel, a.k.a. Chad, who usually joins us during the Colts segment. is going to jump in on the March Madness bracket, and we're staying at March Madness bracket talk and March Madness talk throughout the month of March. Guys, I do want to point this out to you. Throughout the rest of the month of March, all the way until we have a national championship, we're going to be doing updates right here on the Balance Radio Network, myself and Gene Walker and $2 Bill Josh. So make sure that you guys join us, and we'll let you know when those times are. We had our first one yesterday at 2:30, and we'll have one tomorrow afternoon as well. Guys, I tell you what, it's getting that time of year. We're standing by waiting for Gene Walker to give us a call. He was up late last night. I know he is going to call us yet this hour live from Chicago at the Big Ten Tournament, which we saw IU put down Illinois yesterday. Obviously, Illinois' war chant, if you want to call it that, wasn't able to make it happen. All right, we're going to start with you, $2 Bill Josh. And obviously, I know that yesterday in the update, I'm going to stop using that word obvious. I'm as bad as about using the word obviously as I am about calling Cliff Tanner Kenny Barr for some reason. So, $2 Bill Josh, IU, Illinois yesterday, you had some questions and thoughts about Dan Docke. So let's pick up where we left that off yesterday on the IU-Illinois game.
All right. Well, once again, as I've been given information that occasionally Docke will tune in and listen to our show, Dan, I'm extending you the opportunity. Come on the Balance. We're not asking you to come on the show to fight with you. Come on the Balance and answer your critics. You have a lot of them across the country. Come on the Balance, talk to us via Twitter, and let us know what exactly IU did to make the quote-unquote guy who sent Michael Jordan, the guy who sent North Carolina home in 84, why you're so blatantly anti-IU. In fact, the only person in the world I can come up with that's more blatantly anti-IU than Dan Dockage is big-time TV referee Ted Valentine, who I believe is in the United Center today and refereeing the IU game. And if you're a huge fan, Ted Valentine is refereeing the IU game today, it's over, guys. We're not going to the Big Ten final. It won't happen if Ted Valentine's the referee. Sorry, that's the way it is. But, Docage, in all seriousness, come on the show. Let's have a discussion why you're so anti-IU.
Well, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Josh. I don't know that he's anti-IU. A lot of people say, well, he got snubbed from the job after Bobby Knight. I don't know. Maybe he didn't get snubbed. Maybe he wasn't the best candidate. We'll start with you. Axel, welcome back to the Balance Show. It's good to be talking hoops with you instead of the NFL and the Colts. But Chad, talk with us a little bit about IU. And what are your thoughts about Dan Dockage, and does Josh have merit in what he says?
Well, Josh has enough merit in what he says. I used to call into the Dan Dockage show. Then I realized he is the Bill O'Reilly of Sports Talk Radio. He will get guests on his show, and he will take their opinions, whether it is a listener or a special guest. Yes, I hear you, but you're still wrong, and I'm right. And that's how Bill O'Reilly rolls, and that's how Dan Dockage rolls. I think he's going through an identity crisis. He's trying to form a personality outside he basically acts like he's totally unafraid of the consequences of what he says. I heard him call listeners just morons just for an opinion that he disagrees with them on. He won't elaborate. He won't do anything. I mean, that's why I stopped calling into his show, because he is almost dictatorial in the way he handles his sports talk radio, and he thinks his opinion is the only one that matters in the whole world of sports. But he's got this tunnel vision, and he lives in his own world, and whoever enables him is the one that needs to take a closer look at what his show is becoming.
Well, here's the thing, and we look at now, he's not the only one to pick this up. Let's not group him doing his show, as you mentioned, Bill O'Reilly. A very good point there, and I think of Rush Limbaugh, and we think of Howard Stern. We think about people who actually have developed good radio shows. Part of radio and being a host, and I'm playing the devil's advocate here, you have to generate conversation. You have to generate buzz. Now, I'm not saying that Dan Dockage is an IU hater. In fact, I don't think that he is. He lives in Bloomington, Indiana. His heritage is deep in IU, and he follows IU very, very closely, and he especially Indiana basketball when it comes to AU basketball, when it comes to scouting. A lot of things Dan Dockage has his thumb on and knowledge on is in and around related to IU. Now, does he say some things on air maybe to generate some conversation, to generate phone calls to his show? I don't make him a sinner for that. I don't cast him into hell for doing that. But I certainly don't know that he's necessarily anti-IU for being able to take a subject matter, whatever it might be, and, you know, say, hey, you're a moron. I don't know any other way to say it. And that's because you disagree with him, because he is trying to generate ratings for his show. And he's doing it very, very well.
I just don't think the way he's going about it is actually generating ratings for his show. People listen more to the JMV show and want to call more into the JMV show because JMV is more engaging. And he gives some cred to the listeners' opinions, and at least he doesn't just like dismiss them with insulting remarks. And I mean, that's the way that Dan Dockage rolls. I mean, you don't have to maybe insult at your listeners in order to generate ratings. You can have strong opinions without generating insults. That's my opinion.
You're a moron.
If I could interrupt real fast.
Go ahead. I'll let you, just 1 second, but I do want to get to Preston here. I know he's been standing there like the redheaded stepchild, and I also want to make a point here. We're a national show. We're all over the United States here. So one thing I want to point out, if you're hearing us talk about Dan Dockage's radio show here in the local market in Indianapolis, he has a radio show that is national. We don't know if he's in your market or not. He's part of an ESPN affiliate locally, but not nationally. And if you're not familiar with Dan Dockage, other than just the calling of the IU games, maybe you're not familiar with what we're saying here. But Preston, I don't know if you're able to hear Dan Dockage's show, but we certainly want you to chime in on the conversation there.
I would kind of agree with you in his like history and connection to IU. It would be really hard for me, particularly if I played at Kansas, to go away and be a Kansas hater. I think part of your job as a personality on any entertainment is to create buzz, whether it's ratings or not. It gets people listening to your show. So if IU fans are ticked off about Dan Dockage, then they're going to listen to the Dan Dockage show and act all angsty the entire time. But I think he might just play the devil's advocate until he's purple in the face and then people get mad at him. I don't think he's an IU hater, but he probably says a lot of things and puts his foot in his mouth a little more than he ought to.
Well, and we look at the same thing with the Pacers, and you look at a lot of the various different national broadcasts. The Lakers were in town yesterday. You watched the national broadcast, and it's all about Kobe, and oh, woe is Kobe, woe is Kobe, woe is Kobe. Not so much about the Pacers. Does that make the Pacer haters? I don't know. One of you guys sound like Darth Vader, so I think it might be you, Josh. But anyway, Josh, go ahead, and what was your thoughts? We've got to get into today's games and stuff, but go ahead.
All right. Well, the official Twitter reported for the Bounce and at Pro Indy, I've got direct messages from Kansas, Florida, California, New York, Indiana, demanding that somebody in the media hold Dan Dockage accountable for his idiotic opinions on college basketball broadcast and his show. And as promised via Twitter, I will stay on this until we get Dan Dockage to appear on the Balance and say what's what. So for all those who don't follow me on TubeBill on Twitter, follow me at TubeBill Josh, and all those who do, continue to tweet Dan Dockage and tell him to come on the Balance, and let's have a civil discussion about who Dan Dockage is and how he feels about IU.
Well, Here's the thing. I have reached out to Dan numerous times, and I've talked to Dan via email, and me and him have been conversing, and he has actually said, before today anyway, he has actually said he would love to come on our show and talk some IU basketball with us. He is extremely busy right now with his obligations to ESPN, who's actually paying him, as opposed to we are not. So, but I just so we know, I don't want to put it out there that Dan has refused to come on our show, because he has not. He absolutely has agreed to come on our show until Josh screwed that up for us. All right, Josh.
Maybe you can call him Dan O'Reilly.
we'll call him Dan O'Reilly. Dan Dockage, come on the show, get in the spin cycle. Speaking of the spin cycle, the guy whose room was spinning when he went to bed last night, Mr. Gene Walker, live from Chicago with the Big Ten tournament. How you doing, sir?
Just trying to recover from what I witnessed last night, that's all.
Well, do we want to talk about the Iowa shellacking game, or do we want to talk about the IU game? We certainly want to dive into the Big Ten tournament. So, joining us live, obviously going to be joining us live for March Madness updates as we get through the month of March. We had our first one yesterday. Great time it was. Out there live in Chicago at the Big Ten tournament is our official Big Ten reporter, Mr. Gene Walker. Sir, how are you doing? Break us down yesterday's games. We obviously know what happened with IU. Had a great win against Illinois. And we're going to let you, in your own words, talk about Iowa.
I have seldom, and I mean a lot of people do this, I have seldom seen just a more, I can't even remember when I've seen a more laborious job by a refing crew down a stretch of a game that I saw last night. I don't know that I've ever seen something that bad. And, you know, there were times, I think there was at least three calls against the Hawkeyes that were just pure phantom calls. Forget the fact that it was questionable. There was no contact made. And I'll give you the plays. Devin Marble was called for a charge for a reach out when he was just trying to turn around a guy, make contact with nobody. They took the ball away from him. There was a play where he lost the ball and he reached out for it. Touched nobody. They called a foul on. There was a play where a Michigan State player, I believe Nick, so one of their big guys, literally backstepped three or four pitter-patter steps in the lane, threw the ball up because he lost control. And instead of calling him for the obvious travel, which was clear to even Michigan State fans, called a Hawkeye for the nearest guy for a foul. Then the weirdness of it, the inconsistency of it was, Marble come down the court one time, and they dumped him on his shoulder, take the ball from him, and got the ball, didn't call a foul, just ran him over, basically. And then they called a Michigan State kid for a hip check or something, or a leg check. I think that Izzo, McCaffrey, any coach that's ever coached, any player that's ever played, and I've played and coached myself, I would say you would want the referees to make a decision, number one, which is, how are we calling the game? Is it going to be a Bellator Fighting Championship game, or is it going to be a, I look at you cross-eyed, now we all start crying, West Coast style game? But which is it, though? And once you decided that, call that kind of game for 40 minutes and give us a sense of how that's going to go. When it is so bad that it affects the game, one call, I don't know that one call does. I think human error, they try to be perfect. They never get credit when they do great jobs. Referees never get credit when they do all these really good jobs. They just get ignored. It's the best they can hope for. But when it is this bad, and when it's this bad involving a referee that has been under heat for a very long time, I wonder if the conference has to finally start asking itself, is it time to move on from him? And he wasn't the only one out there doing it. And I will say that there was another reason or two, a great effort by Michigan State to come back, and some turnovers by the Hawkeyes that were from Iowa that were a part of this as well. But I just thought that what we saw last night was laborious. And
I don't know. I don't know how to get my head around what I saw.
Well, certainly, and you know, it, for a while there, it looked like number six Iowa would pull off one of the biggest upsets in tournament history. Before those tough calls that you just talked about down the stretch, Iowa's really, that win would have been huge to improve their NCAA tournament resume. The Hawkeyes lost, though, 59-56 in a game so frustrating that Coach McFray threw his jacket on the floor in a little temper tantrum. Maybe it was warranted. Obviously, Iowa had been listed by most bracket analysts as the tournament bubble, and a lot of people actually thought that Iowa was the Cinderella inside the tournament as far as that goes. At this point, it looks like the Hawkeyes are almost certainly headed for the NIT. Maybe that was the bit of the frustration. And I know you're an Iowa fan, Gene, but at the same time, Iowa lost the game. We're going to start moving around the corner, around the clock here, guys, so we can get in all the thoughts on this big Iowa game. We're going to break down the Big Ten, and we're going to get into the Kansas Jayhawks as well, because Preston Barr is joining us, our student representative today from University of Kansas in Jayhawk Nation. So we're going to move around the clock here. We'll start with you, Preston. The Iowa game last night, huge loss, if you will, for Iowa, because it pretty much sealed their fate, put the nail in the coffin, if you will, to go to the NIT tournament and not to the March Madness tournament, or the big dance, as we call it. So, Preston, thoughts on that game?
I was unfortunately traveling during the game. However, I may or may not have been game casting from my car. And I was absolutely shocked to see the Michigan State one. And since I didn't see the specific calls, I'll talk about, like, my biggest frustration as a college student and college basketball watcher is that referees view, I'm speaking broad and I'm assuming a heck of a lot of things, but they view themselves as part of the show. And I saw a video the other day of a ref calling a Lakers game, skipping from the baseline to half court, calling a block. He skipped like five times, and he literally runs across the entire court, like becoming part of the show. And I think oftentimes refs get caught up in the, like, emotions, and they lose the consistency, like you mentioned. They need to figure out what game they're going to call at the beginning, call it all 40 minutes and more if needed. But they get caught up in this emotion, and they get caught up in the game, and they just start becoming a part of the game and calling these phantom fouls. And I've seen that happen a lot last year in the conference tournaments and in the big dance, and then again this year it's been a continued trend. So I'd love to see that kind of step away and refs step out of the game for a second. And you still have emotions, but call it a consistent game.
All right. We'll move on around to $2 bill. Josh, were you up? Josh is our official Twitter reporter. Josh, were you up for all of these games, or did you miss some of it? But anyway, we know the end result here, and we heard what Gene had to say about this game. Obviously, there's some unfair calls. Maybe so, maybe warranted, maybe they really were unfair calls. But it basically put the nail in the coffin for Iowa not to make it to the big dance. So, Josh?
Well, I was up. The only part of the games I missed yesterday was the second half of the Notre Dame game. Originally, I was at a concert, but I looked down at my phone. I saw Michigan State, Iowa looked really good. I was bored at the concert. I walked over to the nearest sports bar, caught the entire second half of that game. And I'm going to agree with you, Gene. In fact, I might say it a bit more bluntly than you did. Jim Delaney, it's time. You got big money TV, Ted Valentine, who's supposed to referee the IU game today. For all you IU fans out there, you know it's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when and how big he's going to screw IU in the game today. You got the referees from last night's game. Refs, you're not a part of the game. Jane didn't go to the United Center with the media credential or a ticket. Nobody else has media credentials or tickets to see the guys and the zebra shirts. Nobody cares. Nobody knows your name. Nobody should know your name. Call the game. Call it fair. Call it consistent or get a new line of employment. It was an absolute joke. However, with Kentucky losing, I still have Iowa in the field
And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but based on the injustice way that Michigan State won the game last night, I hope Ohio State takes Michigan State to the cleaners today.
Well, sir, one thing for sure, I don't know if we're it's to be debated who is the best coach of the Big Ten, but McCaffrey obviously very, very upset about some calls that were made. But at the end of the day, guys, the Zebras have the call, and they're the ones on the floor. They're the ones with the whistle. We do have to abide, whether or not we like it or not, we have to abide by their decision as being final. Mr. Axel, thoughts on Iowa, Michigan State?
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the Richmond game, where the refs literally told just to go over and the gazillion free throws at the end, and my goodness. And I think Iowa should have had Bob Sanders on the sideline to just give a check on the ref as he's running by. And that might have set him straight. So I don't know. I just put on a clown costume so you will be part of the show. So, and what else can you say? But it almost seems like they wanted Tom Izzo to not have a 4 or 5 season, keep him in the 2 or 3 seat or something like that. I mean, it's like, I don't know, some of the favoritism that these big colleges get. You do have to wonder. So,
I think it's all about a conspiracy. I think nobody wanted Iowa to be in the tournament, and they made it happen. They had to go all the way down. All right, we don't want to throw salt on Gene's wounds any more than we absolutely have to. He sent me a text. I don't want to talk about it. So we won't.
Tom, stop. I do want to talk about it.
First of all, go ahead.
You just said it was the death nail. Let me back you up for a second. I got a question for you, Tom, only here. Are you ready, Tom?
I don't know. That sounded dangerous, but go ahead.
Here we go. You take, and you guys can correct me on the amount of automatic bids there are. I think there's around 20. Is that correct or not?
I believe there's 22.
Yeah,
22. So that would leave 46 if my math is correct. I got an F in math. If 46 teams are left, Tom, go. Are there 46 teams in America in Division I better than the Iowa Hawkeyes, yes or no?
Well, if you're asking me, are there better teams than Iowa?
46. Are there 46 teams better than a team that has 21 wins in the best conference in America, bar none, that lost 3 games to top 5 teams by 4 points or less, and won 7 of their last 9 coming into that robbery last night? I'm asking you, are there 46 better teams than the Iowa Hawkeyes, yes or no?
Yes. There
are
is.
You,
yeah,
are
one
you
and
insane?
No, no, no way. No way.
Bob,
no way.
Are you insane?
I
are you
insane? I tell you what. Here's the thing, and here's why I'll defend my answer here. Here's the thing, guys. When you look, and we see this more often over in the BCS bowl in the football situation, to where you have by record and so forth, and how they're determined to be in the bracket. We don't know. It's not Selection Sunday. There could be some losses today. There could be some things that could happen. I did call it the death knell because it looks like Iowa's headed to the NIT. IU has been to the NIT many times. Now, here's the thing. When you go by record itself, maybe Iowa deserves to be in there. But there is a team, and they put these extra automatic bids in there, And they did these play-in games for a reason, for situations very much like this. At what point do you draw the line, I guess is what I'm saying. When you ask me, is there a better team, and here's why I said yes. Last night there was a better team, okay? Last night Iowa lost. Now, we can blame it on the refs all we want, but last night Iowa lost. Had Iowa won today, I mean, won last night, they'd be playing again. So when you ask me, is there a better team? Yeah.
No, that's not what he's asking, Tom. Tom, that's not what I asked you.
Tom, what Gene said is there 46? Not is there one, not is there 45. Can you write down 46 teams that have done more than Iowa have done? Yes, there's better teams in America. Is there 46 teams in America better than Iowa? Not 45. Is there 46?
Well, apparently,
what is their RPI?
Whose show is this?
In other words,
guys, I'm just gonna, no, I'm just kidding with you. Go ahead, Gene. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In other words, what you're saying is there's 46 other teams out there that lost 7 of the 11 games this year they played by 5 points or less. There's 46 other teams out there that basically came with an eyelash of sweeping Wisconsin, who I think is going to make a run in this tournament. There's 46 other teams that played a Big Ten schedule, which we know that's not true. The ACC was very, very poor this year. The Big 12 wasn't impressive except for a team or two. The Big East was shrapnel after about 14. I'm saying look at the whole resume. The non-conference schedule for Iowa was awful. It was very weak. The conference schedule was brutal. It was unbelievable. I think it's a wash. Don't give them credit for either one. But they've beaten Iowa State, which I think is going to the tournament. They beat Illinois, which I think is going to the tournament. They beat Wisconsin. They're going to the tournament. And I think Minnesota, with strength of schedule, might still get in. If that's the case, they beat them as well. So what I'm asking you, Tom, is are there 46 teams? Tom Izzo himself last night said off the mic that he couldn't believe they're not ranked around 25, Iowa themselves, with where they sat after the Northwestern win. Iowa, because Minnesota was ranked, the first three games that Iowa played this year in their conference were all against highly ranked teams, one after the other after the other. So you can tell me all about the non-conference schedule. The conference schedule was so brutal that I believe it was a bookend of each other. And they did what you asked them to do, be competitive. How do you finish the season? They won 7 of 9. And this isn't a fluke. This isn't a fluke with Michigan State, because this is the second time Iowa's lost by exactly 3 points. So it's not like they're not playing at their level. They did it twice. All I'm asking you, are there 46 teams in America better than an Iowa team that was a 6th seed coming into easily the best conference in all of America's tournament? That's what I'm asking.
Well, here's what I'm saying. I mean, really, what it amounts to is this. I think that we cannot – we can always find – especially when you've got these play-in games and these auto-bid games, automatic bids, you got to – there's bubble teams. Obviously, Iowa was one of those bubble teams. Any of those bubble teams that get knocked off the bubble can ask me the same question. The thing is, they got knocked off the bubble. That's what happens. That's why they call it March Madness. That's why we're having this discussion. So if you could ask me personally, are there 46 better teams? Maybe not. I agree with what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I'm gonna say maybe I'll change my answer a little bit here. Maybe I'm gonna pull a Barack Obama. I'm gonna change my stance. No, but when you look at where the selection is and the process that's put in place, there are better teams. That's why they're not going to make it to the big dance. I mean, unfortunately, it's unfortunate when you're on the bubble. We could go back and say, well, why didn't they win these games back in their schedule to not put them in the situation that they're in now? Why did it have to come in? And IU's been there. All of our teams have been there. Why does it have to come down to the win in a tournament, whether or not you're in or you're out? The thing is, you should have won other games along the way, Gene.
Tom, and that's the thing, Tom, it shouldn't have been about one win. It should be about a body of work. And that's really the point. It should have been about last night. So if they win that one game, if they hang on to that one game, they're tournament worthy, and if they don't, they don't. It's literally that razor thin. I could have asked you, are there 68 teams better than Iowa? See, I already gave you the 20 that clearly aren't, that you know for a fact are not Liberty, and all these other teams that get in somehow, they get hot for a couple games and get in with 15 wins. We've already conceded that the NCAA puts in 20 teams to this tournament every year, of which we know 17 or more don't have a prayer of going anywhere. So we've already conceded to get everybody involved, and I'm fine, we get everybody involved, that you're going to put 17 to 20 teams in every year that aren't even in the top 68. Now you've conceded that. Now you're going to start digging into the next 46, or 28, was it 30, I'm sorry, whatever the number is. You're going to start digging into the next 46 and start saying that now let's put in the best 46 teams. Well, we're not going to do that either, and this is why. Because we've got these five formulas, and this being that, Dude, there is no way in the world that the RPI and the numbers this year match out to what they have in the past. The top 10 and the next 10 or 15 teams are closer now than ever before. If this was 1999, I think you'd have a case, because then you knew UConn and Duke and Michigan State, all these teams are so far ahead of everybody that if you're only ranked 27th or 24th or 18th, then you know there's a big chasm between them. But the top 10 right now isn't that much better than the next 15 teams. And the 5 or 10 that come after that aren't that far behind them. And
right.
That's why I'm saying that a VCU, I agree with $2 Bill, is going to have a chance to really run this year. St. Louis is really going to have a chance to run. Ohio State in 12, wherever they're ranked, is going to have a chance to run, because the top 10 is shaky, it's scary, and you can't put your faith in them. So the way it's going now, it can't be an automatic assumption as it's been in the past, because college basketball has more parity now than any other time I can ever remember even being close to this. That's what I'm saying. If you really want to get into it, let's just say, why don't we take the best 68 team? But they're never going to do that either. And that's why the bubble teams have an argument. And that's why Indiana probably had an argument back in the day, too. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the fact that you should just give it to Iowa or to whoever because. No. It's because they played an unbelievable schedule, were competitive in that schedule, and did come up with 21 wins. That's what I'm saying. If Michigan State blows them out last night by 30 points, which is what I was told by a few fans coming out was going to happen, then I don't know that I'd make this argument for the second time in a row. They played a top four team down to the wire. I just don't think that those teams are out there.
Well, and I wish we had time, Gene, to continue this debate, but unfortunately we do not. We want to get into this Hoosier-Wisconsin game today. Obviously, the Hoosiers may have already penciled a number one seed for themselves. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Let's talk about this. They're two wins away from winning the Big Ten tournament. And here's what I want to clarify, guys, and we'll go around the clock here and get your thoughts on what IU's actually playing for. We know IU's won the Big Ten championship, but that's a difference than winning the Big Ten tournament. A lot of people get that confused. Well, how can they be Big Ten champions when they didn't win the tournament? Obviously, they're Big Ten champions because they've won more games. IU has completely turned around their program. But a thorn in their side is that Wisconsin Badgers. If there's any team out there that can stop any of those two wins, it's Wisconsin. If they get past Wisconsin today, I think IU will win the Big Ten tournament. And they're due, guys. They're due. And we talk about Iowa. It's been reversed. It's been reversed before. We're just talking about those two teams. It's been reversed when Iowa's been on top and IU has been on the bottom. This year, it's just not Iowa's year, but it is Indiana's year, and they got the Wisconsin Badgers. So we're going to move around.
Hey, Tom, we lost you.
Hello?
I guess we lost Tom. Are you still there, Dean? Do you want to take that question first? What IU is playing for today up in the United Center?
Yeah, I mean, IU, we talked about this 4 years ago when I was in Bloomington. I interviewed Tom down there, and I asked him very simply, have you ever seen anything like the support that the Indiana fans were giving him in a storied program when nothing was going their way? Indiana couldn't rub a win together if you put a gun to their head and said their parents were going to die. They were that bad. As you'd mentioned, probably $2 at some point, the program was at that, just a shambles. And he said, not only have I not heard of it, I've never seen it, I've never heard of it. I've never even heard of something like this. The Indiana fans did a great job.
All right, hey, Gene, I hate to interrupt you. I really do hate to interrupt you. But we were having some technical difficulties on my end. So from the time that I went to Chad, I totally missed the entire conversation. So if somebody could bring me up to speed, go ahead, Chad, and then go back to you, Gene. I apologize. My ears totally quit working. So I didn't hear anything I said. Chad, I know you guys went on with your conversation, and I apologize. I lost you guys. So go ahead, guys. Just bring me up to speed.
Oh, Josh, well, I let Josh handle the question.
I just kind of picked up for you, Tom. I asked Gene, and then I was going to go over to Axel next. What side are you playing for today? And Gene was kind of telling us about where the programs came from, so now that everybody's caught back.
All right, go ahead. Unfortunately, in live radio, sometimes things happen. You don't even know why. But go ahead, Gene, and I do apologize for that. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. The thing was, I was basically saying, Tom, was that when I interviewed Tom Crean a long time ago and asked him if he'd seen the kind of support that he'd ever seen what Indiana fans were doing, giving him leeway, knowing that the program would need to be rebuilt, didn't expect anything to happen like instant oatmeal. And he had said he'd never even heard of anything like it. And it was great. It was back when they weren't winning ball games. My comment to somebody was, the best hire Indiana could have ever made, and give them 3 or 4 years. Well, here we are, I think, at the four-year mark. And Indiana right now, the way that they came out and played yesterday, I really think shows that maybe they did get a couple of the kinks and the focus and the concentration gaps, if you will, out of the way, because they came out and played with a great intensity yesterday against Illinois. And if they can continue to do exactly that, they should be fine. They're playing basically to establish that the botch at the end of the season was just what happens to teams. And it was the fact that because they're young and because they haven't been winning, that this is too much for them to gather. That's what they're playing for. And they're playing against probably one of the more difficult teams to prove that against. Because Wisconsin makes you do things miles from your comfort zone. Wisconsin makes you play the game you don't want to play. And that includes Indiana as well. Now, Indiana won't be as liable for failure as Michigan was, because Michigan is either a transition team or they're putting up an L on the board. If they really become that team down the stretch of the season. If they run, you're doomed. If they don't, they're doomed. And Wisconsin was able to exploit that and make that happen. Indiana's got a half-court game, and because of that, they should be fine today. They're going to have a tough one. This game's going to go down to the wire, and you guys both know Wisconsin's already beaten Indiana this year. So this is going to be a very tough, very close game, maybe even an ugly game, because that's what Wisconsin wants. But whatever it ends up being, the job that Tom Crean has done in a very short time at Indiana is remarkable, and he's put a storied program back on the map. And that is good not only for the conference but for college basketball, because I do agree that when the storied programs fall, as Indiana fell so badly for a while, that it's not good for the game. I really think that Hoosierville's got to be at least respectable, and I believe that he brought that back. So I got nothing but good stuff to say about Tom Crean. I think he's phenomenal.
All right, well, let's move on a little bit here. I do want to get past the Big Ten a little bit. Unfortunately, March Madness nails us down to so many teams and so many games. I want to move over to Jayhawk Nation, and I know Preston Barr is our student representative today from Kansas, University of Kansas, in the Jayhawk Nation. Obviously, Kansas has produced a good month. No matter who you root for in Kansas, Kansas State, University of Kansas, Wichita, all of those teams inside of Kansas have been able to really – looks like we're going to see them move forward into the month of March. But let's talk about the Jayhawks. Mr. Preston Barr, what's on the store for the Jayhawks, and what do they got to do? Well, we believed it, that they're going to get to the Final Four, depending where the seeding takes place at. But as we've also said, this is the year – where you're going to have your bracket buster brackets, because there's going to be some serious upsets inside of the brackets this year, and we've already seen that happen. So Jayhawk Nation, Mr. Preston Barr, our student representative out there in the Jayhawk Nation, in the midst of it all, where, as a student, where does the Jayhawks need to do to get deep into the tournament?
I don't know how closely people follow the Big 12, but we shared the conference title with Kansas State this year. Even though we beat them twice, the way conference titles work, they don't have tiebreakers. So when we had a lot on the line at Baylor, they played the game of their life, and we didn't want it hard enough or more than often we weren't motivated to beat them, so we had to share the conference title, and that's something we have nine straight, and that hasn't happened since UCLA. We hate sharing the conference title. I will tell you that. The entire – no Jayhawk wants to share it with a Wildcat. They're like, we don't even want them to be our rivals because we just don't like K-State. So this game has a lot on the line, particularly for us, because we want that outright. We want to win this last game against them. We want to win the conference title today at 6. We want that, and I think that we'll have that pretty easily. We beat K-State by double digits both times in Manhattan and in Lawrence, Kansas. So I think as long as we play tight defense and turn the ball out or turn them over, we'll have a pretty easy win. Plus, this is a closer home game for us than it is for them. It's like 40 minutes away from Lawrence, and it's about 3 hours away from Manhattan. So I don't know how neutral this court is, in all honesty.
So when you say Manhattan, you don't mean Manhattan, New York.
No, I mean the Little Apple in Western Kansas, Manhattan.
Obviously, you guys went to play the other Iowa team yesterday against and took it pretty easily, 88-73. I don't know that there's anything that we really need to break down with the other Iowa team, and that's they weren't able to get it going for sure. So we'll move around the clock there, and I think you're up, Josh. Go ahead. Let's talk about the Big 12, Kansas State or Kansas Jayhawks.
Well, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, and I hope that's all of our listeners, since I am the official reporter for the show, I asked a question last night. And Preston, I want to get your answer, and Gene and Axel, you guys are all big college basketball fans, with Duke and Georgetown losing last night. If Kansas can blow out Kansas State today, and especially if Wisconsin knocks off IU, or maybe even if IU wins, if Kansas can get a dominating win, does that give Kansas a number one seed? Because in my bracket, and I'm going to release it later today, but in my particular bracket, my top four teams right now are Duke, Gonzaga, Indiana, and Kansas. And if Kansas loses, then Ohio State. A lot of people are going to argue Louisville, but I personally think Kansas is more impressive the Louisville. So Preston, Axel, Gene, does anybody think of a win today by Kansas for giving them a number one seed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kansas win it all without a number one seed. When they had number one seeds, they have floundered more often. So ooh. I would look at it as a good luck charm if they don't get the number one seed.
All right. We're like at a four-way stop where everybody tries to go at the same time. So go ahead, Gene.
I actually agree with that last comment. It seems like their death nail is the number one seed for the Jayhawks over the years. I think that there's probably a good notion right now that Kansas just isn't a top 14. And no offense to our friend out there in Lawrence, but what makes them maybe more dangerous is the fact that they did fall on their face a little bit this year. Maybe they are a second or third seed, and I think that might serve them well. But if they beat Kansas State today, providing that that Michigan State doesn't come through and win this tournament or whatever, I don't know that I'd have a good argument to say otherwise.
Well, absolutely. So, here's the thing: Kansas and Kansas State, Kansas State had a phenomenal football season, and they are carrying it over into the basketball season. So there must be something that Kansas is doing well when it comes to recruiting. So, you know, I'm excited for both teams. I don't have a dog in this fight, as they would say. But I just because of Preston and just because we love you, Preston, I'm gonna throw a hat in there for the Jayhawks. But I'll tell you what,
you shouldn't have.
Hey, you're right. You know, but hey, it is what it is.
I think they send their Kansas State head coach to both football and basketball recruiting. I mean, he's got the eyes of a hypnotist, you know.
I think part of it is there's no talent in the Big 12 outside of Kansas and Kansas State. Can you really name any other team in the Big 12 this year that has a shot to do anything? Yes, people are going to talk about Iowa State because they hit the three. The only way they're going to do anything in the tournament is if they stay hot from three-point land. This year, the Big 12, Preston, I want to see if you agree. it was basically Kansas State and the Little Eight, or however many other teams there are in the Big 12.
I would give us 2.5 teams with Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State has a way to win, and I'm not really sure what it is. They really rally behind their freshmen. So I give us 2.5 and 7.5 small teams.
All right, guys, we gotta move on here. We definitely want to get in because it's time for the March Madness. But I tell you what, one of the fun things about March Madness is the bubble team. So it's time for Bubble Watch. And we talked a little bit about the one of the bubble teams, obviously being Iowa, and I don't think we need to revisit that conversation again. But we do want to talk about some of the teams that are on the bubble and who we want to watch in going forward here in college basketball. Let's talk a little bit about we talked about Iowa. I want to talk in the Big Ten about Minnesota. I don't know about Minnesota, but they're definitely on the bubble, and I think that Tubby's doing a great job out there. So let's go around the clock here. And is Minnesota in or out? Are they off the bubble? We'll start with you, Josh. Go.
Minnesota is out, and here in a few days, Tubby Smith will be out.
All right, Chad.
Tubby Smith is an overrated coach. If Matt Painter had the talent that Tubby Smith had, he would be coaching Minnesota to better results.
Gene.
Minnesota probably is out, but they did have one of the harder strength of schedules, which definitely counts. I think they have a good neutral court record, but they have a really bad road record. So they are as much on the bubble as Iowa is, no question.
All right, Preston.
OUT out.
OUT out. I think I've got everybody there. And what I'm going to do through the bubble watch here as we move forward throughout the show here is I'm just going to give two teams, and you guys can tell me in or out or what have you. And we already talked about Iowa. And so we got to run away from Iowa, all right? We're going to also look at the Big 12. And we talked about Baylor and what they were able to do against Kansas. We're going to get there. This is an ESPN. ACC doesn't come first, all right? We got them on our list here. I just want to go down my list here. So the Big 12, okay. We look at Baylor and Oklahoma. We'll start with you, Josh. Out of those two, who's in, who's out?
Neither one of them should be in. Neither one of those two teams is worthy of the tournament.
All right, Chad. Oklahoma or Baylor, either one of them in?
No.
Gene?
Baylor, maybe. I don't think Oklahoma should be in, and probably not. Probably not either one.
Well, and we know where your loyalty lies at, Preston, but so for a moment, Oklahoma or Baylor, either one of them in or out?
I watched both teams beat my Jayhawks. Neither really deserve a spot. I actually think that Oklahoma has a better chance of being in, but won't get in.
Okay. So are we saying Baylor's in or out? Are we both?
OUT. Baylor's out. Both out, but Oklahoma has a better chance. That's my opinion.
Well, my opinion, I think Oklahoma is in, and I wish we had time to really get into that. Let's go to the Pac-12. Arizona State, are they in or are they out? That's really the only one on the bubble there I think. Everybody, go ahead. Josh, out?
Absolutely out.
Chad?
Out.
Gene?
Out.
Preston?
Not even a close play at second. He's out.
I think everybody's out with Arizona State. Let's go ahead and move on down to the Southeastern Conference, the SEC as we know it. Obviously, the locks are Florida State and LSU for sure. Let's talk a little bit about the bubble teams there. And this is – we could go on all day long. The SEC is the second Big Ten, in my opinion, on how strong of a conference it is, you know, and how much fun they watch it. We look at Kentucky. Who would have ever thought? The Kentucky Wildcats.
Hey, Tom, did you say Florida and Missouri or Florida State and LSU? I mean, Florida and Missouri are the locks, right?
I'm sorry.
Florida, Missouri are the locks, yes.
Missouri, my fault. I said LSU. I don't know why I said that. I probably because I had them on my list here. That's my fault. Thanks, Chad, for pointing out my faults yet again, brother. No, I'm just kidding.
It's not the first time, Tom. Don't worry about it.
No, it's one of those days. It's one of those days. Kentucky Wildcats on the bubble. Who would have ever thought we would be talking about that, guys? Is Kentucky in or out this year? We'll start with you, guys.
I'm going to go, they don't belong in, but because they're the big, bad Wildcats, you better believe the selection committee finds a way to put them in.
I didn't give you the two teams, all right? Kentucky and Alabama, so we'll start with you, Josh. Is Alabama in or out?
Alabama is out, Kentucky belongs out, but you better believe they'll find a way to put them in anyway.
There it goes back to that conspiracy. Chad, Kentucky or Alabama, either one of those in or out?
Well, I think Kentucky will be in because – yeah, the selection committee might get some invites from Ashley Judd, but Alabama's out.
That would have paid off the NCAA. We got the Judd money. Kentucky or Alabama, we talk about strength of schedule and record. They have the same record, by the way, as of today anyway. Go ahead, Gene.
They don't have the record, and Alabama out and – actually, I don't think it's much of a conspiracy to think that they would want nostalgia. I think that's modus operandi. It's not the same thing. I think Kentucky should be out based on their loss last night. If they won last night, probably in. But $2 bill's not that far off with that. Nostalgia does count, and it has nothing to do with conspiracy. It's about what you want. As I mentioned, Indiana, I like when the nostalgic teams get in there. It's a human element, and they might find a way to put them in. But have they earned it is the question. And the answer to that is absolutely no, they have not earned it.
All right, Preston, Kentucky or Alabama?
If Alabama wins today, they're in, and I will be doing my rain dances in hopes that Kentucky does not get in. I'm still a little bit bitter from last year.
I think all of us don't like Kentucky very much. I'm not a big Wildcat fan, and I grew up down in the neck of the woods where I grew up on the line where either you were an IU fan or a UK fan, and you had to declare your loyalty. A lot of my family is UK fans, and I probably will not be allowed at Sunday dinner anymore by saying this, but I think Kentucky's out. All right. We got one team in the Mountain West Conference, and that's Boise State. Guys, do they get in, Josh?
Absolutely, they get in.
All right, Chad?
Oh, I missed your question. Which team are you talking about?
Just in the Mountain West Conference. I'm just wondering if Boise State's in or out.
I don't know. I haven't watched much Boise State, so I can't comment.
Well, their court isn't blue, I'll tell you that. Gene, Boise State, in or out?
I think for Gonzaga, they better be in because after a while we're going to start examining why this team is the number one seed when they didn't play anybody. So if you don't give anybody any credit out there in that area, then they're the biggest gypsy bankroll to one seed we've ever seen in history. I'd say they're in.
All right, Preston.
They are in because their football field is blue. No, they definitely deserve this spot. They've earned it.
All right, guys, so we got to move on here because I do want to get to the ACC for Chad. But the Atlantic 10 Conference, obviously home of our Butler Bulldogs who locked themselves in. And we want to talk about who they played, LaSalle and Temple. Or we can throw in Massachusetts if you want to throw them in the mix there. But let's just say the two bubble teams is Temple and LaSalle for purposes of conversation. Josh, either one of those teams in or out?
They're both in, and as I broke this morning at 12:30, A-10 is no longer Butler's home. They are now official members of the Big East.
They're not official until after the end of the season. We'll carry it through because if they win in the Final Four, they go to the championship or whatever, they're still going to be a part of the Atlantic 10 in that win. All right, Chad, Temple or LaSalle?
Temple in, LaSalle out.
Gene.
I think Temple should be in based pretty much what I was saying about Iowa. You got teams that are playing good competition at times that are being competitive with them. I think that does have to count as to whether you'd be competitive in a tournament full of those teams. I think it's just common sense. I think Temple's in, LaSalle's out.
All right. Preston.
Temple in, LaSalle out.
Temple in, LaSalle out. And, guys, and here's the thing. When we do our brackets, we're going to fill out an official balance bracket. So we do want to do that. So let's go ahead, and I'm going to go with to the ACC here real quickly because we want to finish this up here. And we'll start with you, Chad. Chad, since you brought up the ACC, who is in, who is out, who's on the bubble? And we don't really have a lot of time. We've got about 90 seconds in our live stream, guys. If we lose, just to put this out here as a point of programming, if you lose our stream, you can pick us up on iTunes and on all the archives. And if we're about to lose some of our affiliate stations here in about 90 seconds, but we're going to continue the conversation here to finish this up here. But you can catch it in the archives. If you lose the stream, wait about 30 minutes. Go to iTunes or tune in or wherever you pick us up, line on your app, and pick us up there. We're about 60 seconds away from losing our stream. But go ahead, Chad.
I think it's top heavy. Duke, North Carolina, and Miami, of course, are in. And I don't know. It's like a lot of question marks on the rest. So I'm not sure about the rest at this point. So.
Well, the teams that I had with the ACC, as far as saying who's in or out in the ACC, I don't know about you guys, but I think Maryland is the team that we got to look at in the bubble. And maybe I'm off on this because ACC, and I've got the Big Ten. I got a lot of conferences that I try to follow, so I'm not up. But obviously, number two, Duke's going to be there. But Maryland's on the bubble, in my opinion. And you guys can feel free to disagree. We'll start with you, Josh. Maryland in or out?
If you're not going to put Iowa in based on one game, then it's not fair to put Maryland in based just on the fact they beat Duke last night.
Good point. All right, Gene, do you want to agree or disagree?
Well, of course I agree. I could have said it better myself.
All right, Preston, ACC, Maryland, in or out?
I think you can't decide on one game, but you can decide on two because they beat Duke twice this year. I still think they're out.
Well, there you go. And all right, guys, so if we were to do the number one seeds right now, we look at the number one seeds, and then we've got to call it a day. But we got four different divisions, if you will, in Dayton, IU, perhaps number one seed. If you were to go through and give the number one seeds real quickly, Josh, who would they be?
I would have Gonzaga out west, Kansas or Louisville in the south, IU in the Midwest, and Duke in the east.
All right, we're going to go with you, Chad.
It'd be Kansas is number two, and the rest are number one.
All right, Gene, number one, or who cares who's number one? This year, maybe we don't care who number one is, but go ahead, Gene.
Well, I mean, on that point, I think that some of these teams that, again, I agree earlier, Kansas not being number one might help, but Michigan State would be helped by not making a number one seed, maybe two or three, and get them closer to playing in Michigan as opposed to having to go out and play on the West Coast as a one or wherever they would end up. So I think the Hoosiers would be a one if they won today. I don't think there's any question about it. I would say if Michigan State makes the finals, they're a top five team. I think that Michigan State has to be a number one seed if they make the finals of the Big Ten tournament. I would still probably go ahead and give KU the nod after the Duke loss. And even though I think that they're just an incredibly weak team that probably won't make it two or three rounds deep, if you don't give it to Gonzaga based on the record, then you have to start looking at some other teams, maybe even in the weak ACC, like, you know, Miami's a little ways farther down. But I just think right now that the pool up at the top three or four is shuffled, and I don't think that any one of them are accepted, except for Indiana.
Well, and you know, obviously IU is going to be a number one seed. I mean, we certainly believe that. I think maybe if they lose to Wisconsin, that might upset a little bit. But go ahead, Preston, real quickly, your number one seeds.
Gonzaga, Indiana. Still got Duke up there, and I would pick Louisville.
Well, guys,
I agree. Louisville, I'm sorry. Louisville has to be a number one seed, I think.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and just give you my number one seeds. Louisville, obviously being one, I think out there in the South is where they'll pick up the number one. Obviously, IU in the Dayton region, that's going to be a home game for them anyway, so they probably will get a team like Liberty or some team like that as a number 16 team, and we don't know yet. Maybe a team called Brooklyn or Kansas Middle School or something.
But all better than Iowa, Tom, so it's okay.
All right. So here's my number one seeds, guys. Then we gotta get into the jungle real quickly. IU, Gonzaga, Louisville, and Duke, all number one seeds, in my opinion. Again, that's where we're at, and we're gonna keep it up as we go through the month of March, guys. Everybody's got 30 seconds, real quickly here, to jump into the jungle, if you will. So we'll start with you, Josh. I know you've been planning a rant. You've been telling me about it. So go ahead, jump in the jungle, sir. 30 seconds, go.
Well, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I've been talking about Fan Revolution 2013. That's what this show is. We're not ESPN. We don't praise the East Coast. We trash the rest of the country. And we're not gossip. If you want pure sports news and projections and brackets and just pure sports without the TMZ, go to Indy Pro Sports or The Bounce Online, or follow me, @BillJosh, or The Bounce, or Indy Pro Sports on Twitter.
All right, now we'll go with you, Chad. 30 seconds, go.
Yeah, I mean, don't sleep on St. Louis, VCU, and the under-the-radar Valpo. As much as the Horizon League is not given much credit, I think Valpo is a very dangerous team. Whoever plays them in their bracket, better watch out.
All right, Gene, go. 30 seconds, sir.
Yeah, you know what? Don't worry about Iowa. I think that middle school team you brought up is just fine. Make them a 7 seed. You know, who am I? I have only been watching this for 30 years. The bottom line here, guys, Iowa has played their way into the tournament in the best conference in America. And again, if it had been the ACC of bygone years or the Big East, everybody would say they should get 8 or 9 in. So why doesn't that stay the same for the Big Ten? It's a double standard. Because it's the Midwest Conference with a soft media court, except for the one that we're talking to today, you guys, and it won't stand up like an East Coast reporter would and shout in their ear.
All right, Preston, you got the final jungle. Go ahead. 30 seconds, sir.
Let's see Iowa in the tournament, because I drove through Iowa City, and it was the saddest feeling city in the United States last night. Rock Chalk Jayhawks today. I would love to see my Hawks beat up some Wildcats and maybe earn that number one seed in the tournament. And I look forward to being on the show again, talking more about some crazy March stuff.
All right. Absolutely, guys. Well, that's going to do it for us, guys. Tune in next week. And remember, tomorrow, the March Madness update. We're going to be talking with Gene, also, who's live there at the Big Ten tournament in Chicago. And we're going to be breaking down all the action tomorrow in the the March Madness update. And throughout the month of March, guys, we're going to help you get going. Remember, don't drink and drive, guys. It ain't cool. Well, I'm out of here. We'll see you next week.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.